Welcome to Listen to Older Voices, a program produced at the Melbourne Community Support Program and brought to you through the Toorak Times. It's always a pleasure to bring you, through their stories, the life and times of older people in our community. All very interesting, all very different, and all very entertaining. Hello, I'm Rob Greaves and thank you for joining Jim Walker and I for the third and final part of his story. Over the past 2 weeks, we've learned much about 80-year-old Jim, but what remains indelibly printed upon us is that he is a fiercely independent man, much like his father, and also like his father, he's never shirked hard work. As a qualified electrician, he placed himself in a variety of jobs, including successfully starting his own business. All in all, Jim worked in the electrical business for some 55 years. Jim also rode motorcycles, including a beautiful 1966 Triumph Thunderbird. And you'll enjoy the story of what happens when Jim confronts a dealer who let Jim's son swap the Triumph for a Yamaha trail bike. When one of his sons contracts a brain tumour, his wife Jeanette has a breakdown, and Jim willingly shares the story of how this led to him losing everything, including his home and his beloved Jeanette, who passes on. Jim is a battler, a smart battler, and a survivor. He bounces back through more hard work. Now, Jim tells us that he has 12 grandchildren, as well as in-laws and outlaws, and we get a sense that at heart, he's very much a family man. There's so much to Jim, and while we'll probably only scratch the surface of this man, we cannot but help love what is revealed. We pick up with Jim talking about the time that despite being injured, his boss tells him to come into work, sit round if he has to, but no matter what he does, he'll still get paid.
I hobbled around at work. I worked for H.H. Green, Harold Green, and he said, you can come to work, you can muck around, do whatever you like, you're still going to get paid.
Ah, boy, they were the days in many ways, weren't they? You tell us, you know, you remind listeners a little earlier, you talked about how that man let you use your rent as the deposit on the house, then you've got a boss who says, look, if you can't, we're too bad, come and I'll pay you anyway. It doesn't work like that today.
Workers were loyal then. You know, you'd go to work every day. I never had sick days. Go to work every day.
So did the accident stop your motorbike riding? Was that the end of it?
Well, I couldn't ride the bike because I couldn't work the brakes or the clutch or anything.
But once the plaster was off, that was the end of it?
I kept the bike. It didn't damage the bike much. Kept the bike, had it for quite a while.
Right. Did you still have bikes when you met Jeanette?
No.
No, that was gone by then.
Yeah. The last bike I had was my son bought a bike, Gary. He bought a Triumph. And then he stripped it all down and left it in boxes. My next youngest, one of the youngest sons, decided he wanted that bike. So he reassembled it all and tried to start it. And I said, don't start the bike without an air cleaner because Triumphs will backfire and catch fire.
I have a Triumph, that's right.
And so he did in the workshop.
Bang.
Set fire to the bloody bike in the workshop.
Oh, no.
Anyway, we salvaged that. So I took it off him, and then we had it in the house. One day I came home, and Richard's got a 250 Yamaha trail bike. I said, where'd you get that? Oh, I swapped the Triumph for it.
What?
I said, where? Down on Canterbury Road. I said, we're going to get that Triumph back.
What model Triumph was it?
1966. Thunderbird.
Oh, wow, okay.
650 twin.
Yeah, I had a model after that. I had a trophy, which was 650.
Yeah.
Yeah, great bike. Well, for he traded it for Japanese junk.
I had a transit van then, so we threw the Yamaha into there, went down to the motorbike dealer, bloke, walked in and said, I've come to get my bike. He said, what do you mean, your bike? I said, that Triumph over there, that's my bike. No, he said, I swapped it to some kid who came in. I said, you bloody robbing bastard.
Pardon me.
I'm going to take it right now. You can't take it, he said. I said, you just try and stop me. You won't stop me. So I said to Richard, come on, drop that Yamaha off here. We're taking the Triumph home. Anyway, I took it home and I just kept it and kept it and kept it. And then a friend of mine got burnt out in 2009, lost his motorbikes, and he wanted one to restore. So he came down here a couple of years back and he gave me $4,000 for it.
Ah, fair price.
Been in the shed for 15 years.
Yeah, but what a bike.
But he restored it, pulled every nut and bolt off, all the spokes out. It cost him $10,000 to restore it. It's now worth $25,000.
But done with love and care. Yeah.
I didn't
good ending for the bike. A good, appropriate ending.
I didn't have the time to do it.
No.
It's only been restored in the last 3 years, 2 to 3 years.
Don't see many Triumph Thunderbirds on the road anymore.
Originally it was a Victoria Police bike.
Another coincidence. My trophy was a New South Wales Police bike. Yeah, the Triumphs reigned for a little while, didn't they?
Yeah.
And then the Japanese did take over. So, oh, that's a great story, though. So, yeah, motorcycles certainly were a part of your life.
Oh, yeah, we had trail bikes, had a lot of trail bikes.
Sure.
Used to ride those, and I used to use my trail bikes for hunting. Go up to New South Wales, take a trail bike up there, and you've got a big property, you know, 10 miles down to the back fence, and jump on the bikes and chase the pigs across the plains. And when they stopped, jump off and shoot the pigs.
God, you were fit, weren't you? So when your children eventually grew up and moved out, what did you and Jeanette do? Did you do anything, or did you just, I mean, how did you feel the whole of not having the children around?
Well, they all... Jason was the last one to leave home. He's 40 now. And in 1983, my wife took up gambling. Because Jason got tumours in the skull and the bones, and I thought she had a mental breakdown.
I can understand that.
And she took up gambling, and we lost the house and everything. So I went bankrupt in 1983.
It's a disease, yes. Yeah.
Anyway, she died about 25 years ago, she died.
Right.
Had a heart attack and died. And we were living in a rented house down in Ringwood. So,
despite all of that, that must have been a blow for you. That must have really left a big hole in your life.
Oh, it did.
Of course it did.
Well, I built myself up again. Bought an old truck, bought a four-wheel drive ditch witch, dug my own trenches for cables and still kept working, and had a good help from a good friend. He used to let me use his account at the wholesalers, and I would go and buy on his account and then just give him the money at the end of the week or whatever, and built myself up again and got back on my feet.
Yeah. So you are what we would call a survivor, aren't you?
You have to.
A lot of people don't, though. A lot of people just crumble. You look at adversity and just go, okay, it's another challenge.
Yeah.
I can see that.
I've always said that things get thrown at you to see how strong you are.
No doubt about it. Now, you've got children. They're married. Have you got grandchildren?
Yep. Yeah. Well, I've got, I don't know, about 12, I think. In-laws and outlaws.
Oh, that's a handful. Do you see them every now and again?
Oh, yeah. Keep in touch on Facebook now. I've got, count up, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and then there's about 12. Hard to catch up.
So long now, and it seems that it was only yesterday. Ain't it funny?
Listen to older voices, the magic of memories.
I've got a lady friend and her granddaughter. She calls me Grandpa because Serena and her mother, Simone, came and lived here for a while when they came over from Perth. And Serena was only 2 years old. And I was still going to work then. And I would knock off work and go and pick her up from school when she went to school at Olinda.
Right.
And then I retired from work and looked after her all the time. She's my granddaughter.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And I've got one's 24, I think. Enya, 24. Alicia's 22 now, I think. Maybe 23.
So any great-grandchildren yet then?
No.
It sounds like it's not too far off, though.
Enya's never going to have children.
By choice?
She says, no, I'm not going to have any kids.
She'll change her mind. Yeah. I've got two sons that'll say the same thing. I said the
Enya
same
says
thing.
No, no, we're not going to have kids. Alicia might. And Jade's only 19 and the others are only
younger, yes.
16 or something.
Yeah. You've seen a lot of changes in your life, haven't you?
Oh, yes,
there is. You've grown up through a period of great changes.
Well, progress, like, as I said, when we went to Canterbury Road, it was a dirt road.
Yeah.
Now it's bitumen road.
And not just bitumen, it's a main road, isn't it?
Yeah, divided highway now.
That's right, yes. The other things that have changed, of course, is technology. When you, going back as a nine-year-old in a house without even power and electricity, can you remember getting power? Can you remember when you first got electricity?
Yeah, we got the power on and got an electric stove in the house. And we had the wood fire stove in the kitchen and electric stove alongside it.
Right. Did that make life easier for your mum?
Oh, yeah, well, you didn't have to light the fire and electric hot water service because we never had a hot water service in the house. Had a copper.
Right.
And that's where I learned to read.
How's that?
Mum would suddenly go and light the copper.
Right.
When I was four. So I'd get a newspaper and I'd look at the newspaper and I was thinking, well, that's good, but what's that? What's that, you know?
Curious.
And Mum would say, you got that fire lit yet? Yeah, nearly.
Nearly after I finished reading this.
I learned to read from newspapers.
What about radio? Do you remember getting your first radio?
Don't remember much about radios.
Didn't play a big part in your life?
No.
What about television? Did that?
We got television in 1956 for the Olympic Games.
Right. That changed a lot of lives, didn't it?
Yeah. And that's when I lived at the corner of Canterbury Road in Bedford. Actually, 53 Canterbury Road, the house behind, because Dad built that house on the corner, and then he said, there's too much traffic in this here, I'm going to shift. So he built a house on the next block and shifted down there off the main corner.
You sound like you've actually kept up with technology. You mentioned that you do a lot of connecting with your own family on Facebook.
Yeah, well, when Kevin Rudd gave us that money to, well, we all got, what, $1,000 or something, I thought, about time I bought myself a laptop.
Mm-hmm.
So I went and bought a laptop. And one of the reasons I bought the laptop is that I was invited to go to the People's Parliament of Australia as a member for every electorate in Australia, picked out one person to go to Canberra.
And you were it for your electorate?
And I was in Casey.
Right.
And I applied and I got the draw to go to Canberra. And we had to give all of our ideas to the government of how we think the government should be run.
That must have been quite a wonderful experience for
you. It was, good.
Yeah.
But they never took it up.
No, well, what do they say? Talk is cheap.
Yeah.
And I bet there, look, not every idea is workable, but I bet there were some good ones.
There were. Well, a lot of people are upset with the preferential voting.
Mm.
It's not a fair way to do it. People are winning a seat in the Senate now with 0.5% of the vote.
How's that representative? Exactly. Yeah. However, they say greater minds than ours reckon it's right. I'm not quite convinced of that, mind you.
Not many countries in the world do preferential.
No. What do you think of the state of politics in Australia?
Shocking. Shocking. They're not there for Australia, they're there for themselves.
Again, being 80 years of age, you've seen good and bad governments from all political persuasions. When do you think it started going off the rails? Can you?
Probably 10, 15 years ago.
What can we do about it, Jim?
Well, you try and kick them out. If you kick them out, then the other ones who come in are just as bad.
That seems to be the problem, doesn't it?
Yeah. Look at the problems they've got in the United States now. Neither one of those persons are bloody fit to be president of the United States.
Well, of course, people listening to this, when they get to hear it, that election will be well and truly over. But we're sitting here wondering who's going to get in, aren't we?
Finished today.
Yes.
And you've tuned into Listen to Older Voices. Turning Back Time. Turning Back Time. Turning Back Time. Turning Back Time. Turning Back Time.
You bought your laptop. Did you struggle to use it, or did it come fairly easily to you?
No, it came easy to me.
Right.
Yeah. But I use it for sending emails, receiving emails, and research.
Right. What do you research?
Well, someone said to me the other day, oh, I've got a milk bottle, and it's marked R.H. Hill Ringwood.
Right.
So I just jumped on the Google, Googled it up, and he had a dairy shop, a milk supplier in Wantirna Road, Ringwood.
Right. So you find it really handy just for general learning.
Yeah, and now I'm a member of the Ringwood Historical Society.
Right.
I'll go back onto the internet and I'll put in there RHL, milk supplier and dairy in Ringwood. Anybody got any information on it? And you'll get all the information from the Historical Society. They'll come back, oh, yeah, I remember the shop. It was there and there and there. Someone will have a photograph of it.
So you find the internet a really useful tool?
Yeah, I do.
Yes. A lot of people in your generation aren't like you, though. They haven't actually embraced the technology like that. They don't know how to use it. What would you say to them?
Well, you've got to keep up. You can't lag behind all the time. I was one of the first men on our work sites to have a mobile phone.
What, when they were like house bricks?
Yeah, the brick they used to call it.
The brick.
A Motorola phone. And it was that tall.
About the size of
that. That square.
Yeah.
With a big aerial up the top. You couldn't put it in your pocket. But it was the best phone I had.
Mm.
I could go up in the mountain somewhere, out in the back of Walhalla and calling it a signal to go down to Bairnsdale and then into Melbourne and back again. Now, bloody phones are shocking.
Yeah, it's not, it's funny, isn't it? The further advanced we get, the further back we go sometimes. What other technology have you did you take to in your life as you grew up? I mean,
well, power tools. Look at power tools today. When I first started work, we used to bore all the holes in the frames with a hand bracing bit.
Yep.
And have a 3/4 inch bit in it, drill a hole through, thread the wires through. Now, oh, then later on, I got an electric drill and I put a long bit in it. And just stand here and drill holes through the top plate.
Bang.
Now you've got a battery operated drill. You don't even have to have leads.
Yes.
And the battery ones today are so good, you know, they'll last. Drill all the holes for a house in about 2 hours and they've still got still life charging. Left in them.
Yes. So there have been some good changes in the period that you've been alive.
Yeah.
What about the world in general? Do you fear for the world in terms of your grandchildren, your children, you know, and your great-grandchildren?
Well, yeah, I do, because the world seems to be running on debt. And I don't know where all the money's coming from. All I think the money is... there's some figures written on a piece of paper. There's no backup to it. You can't say, like, they got all the gold at Fort Knox. Is all that gold there supplying all the money in the world?
I can't answer that.
No. Well, how much is in there? No one knows.
What about things like the environment? When you were young, the air was clean, the water was clean. It doesn't seem to be quite like that. Do you ever think about those issues now?
I don't think we've got the problems here that they've got over in China or India. I was in Hong Kong.
Right.
And I looked out the window of the hotel and tried to take a photograph, and the photograph wouldn't come out. There was so much smog in the air.
But that's going to eventually poison the planet, isn't it? I mean, it's only a matter of how long can you keep pumping it out.
Well, it's all that smog comes from cars.
Mm.
And it's carbon monoxide that's coming out of the cars and diesel fuel smoke. That's what that smog's called. And a friend of mine's just come back from Shanghai and come back with a chest infection because of all the smog. But we've still got fairly clean air here in Australia. I don't see why we have to go to what they call renewable energy when it doesn't work half the time. If the wind doesn't blow and the sun doesn't shine, you've got nothing like they found in South Australia last month.
So you don't think there's any issues with coal-fired stations,
Coal-fired stations today, I worked at Yallourn West when they were building a coal-fired station. I did the electrical work down there. And they've got scrubbers. They've got water misters in the smokestacks and precipitators. There's no carbon ash comes out of the chimneys now. If you look at all the photographs I show you of a big cone with all the billowing coming out the top, that's only steam. Water vapour from the cooling towers.
So you don't, you're not a supporter of some power, generator power?
The world's got to go to nuclear power.
That brings a whole lot of issues though, doesn't it, for people in terms of their fears?
Well, there should be no fears with that. The two major, Chernobyl and Fukushima, whatever it was in Japan, are caused by not nuclear faults. The Russian one was caused by faulty buildings because they had crumbling concrete for the barriers. The other one was caused by a tsunami that flooded the power. And the steam blew, the bloody generators blew upwards, got into the nuclear rods and blew it up with steam. Doesn't blow, it was not a nuclear explosion.
No, but accidents can happen, can't they? I mean, there's two examples. How do you control the accidents happening?
Well, the thing is, they should not have built the Japanese one low down near the sea.
That's true. And on a fault line.
Yeah, and the Russian one should have had better bloody building construction, not crumbling concrete that wouldn't let the, or lets all the heat generate and get out of it, but...
Listen to older voices. Ageless Radio.
G, Jim, when I look at you, I see somebody who looks really quite vital, quite energetic. I can say, in all honesty, you do not look your age. You've got, hopefully, short of that bus hitting you down the road, but if all things go well, you've got quite a few years left in your life yet.
I hope so.
But eventually, we all pass on. Living and dying, it's part of being a human. When that time does eventually come, how would you like to be remembered by your family and friends when they think back about Jim the father or Jim the friend?
All I want is for people to say he was a good man.
That's a simple message, isn't it?
Yeah.
Jim, I've had a wonderful time sitting here with you. The time absolutely flies past, and could I thank you very much for being on Listen to Older Voices?
Thank you. I'm glad to be doing it.
Listen to Older Voices is produced by Rob Greaves at the Melbourne Community Support Program on behalf of Wesley Mission Victoria. The program is supported by financial assistance from the Commonwealth Government through the Commonwealth Home Support Program and is brought to you through the Toorak Times.